Good morning.
Oh, greetings and good morning. Morning, guests. Hi, Kathleen.
We've been gone so long, I've forgotten what your face looks like, Dan.
Well,
now I remember. Now I remember.
Now you can, you can remember. ACK. So first of all, before we get into it, I feel like we need to give a shout out to you, Mark, for that graphic. For today, you totally outdid yourself.
You know, I spent a lot of time on
Mark was hand illuminating with pigments made from rocks mined in special places.
You know,
so that
if I can share my process, those are two separate pages from two different illuminated texts that I smushed on top of, like next to each other, and put a book behind it. And then I bent, made it look like an open book, and then I erased stuff and typed in things. So there's a lot to it.
Wow.
And I was like, you know what?
And to do all of that, you know, with hand tools is hard.
Yeah. I did it all like basically just with a typewriter and different colors of ink. You know, like the guy who does those paintings with one finger.
That's right.
Or with just a stick in his mouth. I kind of did it like that. So yeah, so we're talking about one of my favorite things and one of my least favorite things today. Favorite being Jesus and least favorite being capitalism. So we could We could talk about this for the rest of my life.
For a week. We're gonna talk about this.
Well, not the every hour within that week, just three 1.5 hour chunks.
That's right. Yeah. So I'm Daniel Wolpert. I direct MICA, the Minnesota Institute of Contemplation and Healing.
And I'm Mark Van Stunek. I direct the Center for Prophetic Imagination.
And
we're talking about Jesus Hates Capitalism, which is an era. We were talking before about how you can't speak for Jesus. Well,
that's right.
Kind of. You generally can't, yeah. But this is basically an assertion that I think is likely. And Jesus in the present sense.
Yeah, so we were just saying, to be a little intellectually honest, that, you know, Jesus didn't know anything about capitalism, so it's hard to hate things.
No, there was there was economic exploitation in Jesus's day when he was,
right,
you know, wandering around the Judean countryside. But to the extent that modern systems kind of reflect some of the same concerns that Jesus would have had, then yes. And if you want to be mystical about the risen Christ, anything that oppresses people, I'm pretty sure the living Christ hates. So we're kind of taking some liberties and saying, well, we think Jesus hates capitalism, but specifically we want to talk about, like, what is it about systems of capitalism that confront and conflict with Jesus's vision for human flourishing, particularly when it comes to economic life. That's what we're talking about.
So, and just to give one very concrete example that's been in the news since Biden took office, right? So one of the things that, you know, Jesus did speak directly about, because it's, you know, in the Hebrew Bible, is the issue of debt relief, right? And so, you know, the Sabbath has three parts to it. Mm-hmm. So the first part is the one that people are most familiar with, which is resting one day out of the week. But then there's also a seven-year Sabbath where you're supposed to rest part of the land, mm-hmm. which is very good agricultural practice, leaving some of your land fallow. But then there's the big ringer, the 70-year Sabbath, which is the forgiveness of all debts. And the idea that each person would be restored to their property, because, again, since there wasn't capitalism in Jesus's time and there wasn't the kind of economic monetary debt that we get into so much, when people got into debt, they lost their property and they became debt slaves, essentially. And so the idea was that after 70 years, all the debt would be canceled in society and everybody would go back to their land so they could go back to making a living on their own.
That has so many fascinating implications, that way of thinking about land and labor.
Yeah, yeah. And so, you know, we see when there's discussion, for example, of getting rid of student debt, right? Canceling student debt. You see the reactions of people lose their shit and think that this is horrible and these are horrible freeloaders and I paid for college and you took out these loans and you're just dumb and, you know, you can't make a living. And so, you know, it's a terrible idea to get rid of this debt. Well, Jesus didn't think it was a terrible idea.
Now, this is where, I've had all sorts of arguments with people who want to say that since the Hebrew scriptures enshrine property rights, that we should do the same. And, you know, one, I don't think all of our policies should be lifted from the pages of the Hebrew scriptures or even the New Testament. Like, that's not a good way of developing practices. Like, just like, let's just have theocracy. No, that's not good. But even if that's your case,
where do people think property rights are enshrined in the Hebrew scriptures?
Because people could own land and as families. That's the idea. Instead of it being owned by some sort of collective state, which is totally like not lacking any nuance of categories or thought. Like, I'm just saying that's how they think about it.
It's also wrong. I mean, the land was owned by the tribes. It was a collective state.
I know. So it actually belongs to the Lord. That's kind of the big thing. And then the Lord apportions it according to tribes with, except for, you know, the Levites who have a different arrangement. And then it's goes by, you know, tribe, clan, family, and it's apportioned. And then it's supposed to be reset. Like, that's part of the Jubilee. Let's reset it to God's intent. And we know it didn't really quite happen. And that's the whole point. Like, the fact of them somehow, someone taking someone else's, you know, I'm from the tribe of Judah, and I'm going to have some of the tribe of Dan's land. And I'm going to take it, and it's going to pass on to my children, is not what was in mind at all. So you think about that. And then when you get to Jesus, this is where it gets just really blows things open. People will say, well, Jesus never talked about Jubilee. Well, he did. And he did in a way where he wants it to be continual and forever. Like, so it's not even this cycle. It's like, no, everyone should live in such a way that everything is kind of a big gift economy. And that's what you see happening in the book of Acts, kind of an intensification of this sort of idea. So this idea, and there's so many other things Jesus says, like that parable about some people starting work earlier in the day and some later, and they all get paid the same. And then those people.
Oh, that pisses people off. No end.
Yeah. It's like, that's the logic. That's Jesus's response to this student debt stuff. It's like, you don't want people to be unburdened because you were burdened or you felt like they don't deserve it as much as you. Get that thought out of your mind. Like, that's what Jesus is saying to folks in that particular context. Yet we somehow think that it's ungodly. People somehow feel like the forgiveness of debts is immoral. Yeah. And that just bothers me. You know, that bugs me a lot. And yet, and here's this is the rub. And yet the Catholic Church bishops don't want Biden to take communion. This comes down to this whole, like, we talk about fascism Friday a lot, and, you know, CK points out, yes, Monday with a twist of fascism Friday. Because you can't talk about capitalism without it revealing some of its fascistic tendencies. And part of it is, like, really in this country, property rights is the most sacred thing. And so when you have the most sacred thing of our, probably our civilization, coming into contact with Christian beliefs that should have a different set of sacred things, you can see what wins out.
Yeah. Well, and then, you know, another topic that we can look at, and I assume today we'll just kind of give a general overview, as we often do with this, and then we'll get into specific things as the week goes on, right? So the other scripture that the people lift up, and it's become a whole movement, right, is the Matthew 25 scripture, right? Mm-hmm. So that, you know, where it's talked about that where you see and encounter Jesus and where you do things for Jesus is when you do things for all the people that society has thrown away, right? Mm-hmm. So, you know, the poor, the prisoners, those that don't have clothes, they don't have food. And again, you know, if you just think of the general capitalist reaction to poverty, it basically is, well, you know, those poor people are poor because of their deficit. And we need a poor underclass. There's been a lot of really great work done on this. You know, and this weekend was obviously May Day. And, you know, and in the early 20th century, there was a lot of really great work done on the issue of labor and poverty in this country. And where it was really pointed out that capitalism thrives on, and it is essential to have this poor underclass who always feel the pressure to take shitty jobs. Mm-hmm. And you know, and you see this very clearly when people are talking about all the stimulus money, and they're like, oh, you know, if you give people stimulus money, they don't want to go back to their shitty job. That's terrible. It's like, well, no, maybe we need to look at the fact that, you know, these jobs are horrible and meaningless. Mm-hmm. Maybe that's the problem, right? But no, we don't want to do that. We want to look at, you know, why are people not behaving in such a way to benefit the owner class?
Mm-hmm. You know, I was reading this article, and I think from Andrew Taggart, who I hate reading articles like this because even though he's a kind of a Buddhist philosopher, he tends to be hired by CEOs and stuff. But his, mm-hmm. And so anybody who's like being hired by CEOs, I'm already like, wait a second, is there going to be anything good here? But there is some stuff. Like, so he talks about, he's one of these freelance philosophers who works for businesses instead of in the academy. And he has this idea of total work. You know, this ties in with the what we think of as capitalism. This idea that why we exist is for our work. And that by that work, it gets tied into sort of a capitalist mode of production. And so you have to be productive all the time towards some sort of goal in society. And if you're enjoying leisure, you should feel guilty. Like, so there's this whole shift towards not being able to enjoy leisure class. And you contrast this, not being able to enjoy leisure, and you contrast this with the Middle Ages, which is not great. Like, I don't want to be a serf. But in the Middle Ages, there was this idea that leisure was seen as a purely positive thing. And that if you don't have a proper relationship with leisure, you're disordered. And that work should not detract from leisure. It should enable it. And we all kind of have a vague sense that that sounds right. But in our society, that's not how it really works. Leisure is what you get as a reward if you'd work hard enough. And if you don't work hard enough, you shouldn't get it.
So it sounds like this guy is a lot of the driving force behind, you know, the culture at Google, right, where they try to create this perfect environment so you want to stay there all the time so they just end up working your every waking hour.
It could be, and that's where I want to know, like, where they go with this. But this is part of the problem is, like, we have it built into our system that the ultimate – our purpose is to work and produce and then to enjoy what's left over, which is so profoundly in contrast with everything Jesus talked about. Like, what does it mean to be human? I mean, this is why I think Jesus hates capitalism, is because the way that we understand to be human in the kingdom of God is very different than in the sort of capitalist system. And capitalism is so skillful as kind of a system at just invading every nook and cranny of our existence that we can't even tell. Like, we think that somehow working hard and making money for other people is somehow virtuous. And then people will rip out these quotes from the Apostle Paul that, you know, do all things as unto the Lord, as though that should be our work ethic. Well, what? How do you take a nap unto the Lord? That's an all, one of the all things.
Mm-hmm.
Why is it? Why? Yeah. Some more comments coming in.
We got a couple comments.
Kathleen writes, we bail out banks, but not students. There's all kinds of stuff we bail out that aren't
well,
people.
And, you know, so, you know, this is another example we could pull out of history here, right? There's all this conversation right now about reparations to Black folks for hundreds of years of free labor, which, again, you can imagine how that's going over with the white crowd, generally speaking. Right. But what people don't recognize is that when slavery was ended, slave owners got reparations. Right? Black people didn't get reparations, but slave owners got reparations because they were losing their property. Right. And so they had to get, you know, money to compensate for that. So, yeah, I mean, capitalism is always wanting to bail out the owner class, but the workers never get bailed out, and in fact, when they ask for something, they're usually told that they're bad and morally deficient.
Freeloaders,
yeah, freeloaders. Yeah.
Yeah. by the way, I wish I had it in front of me, and so maybe someone listening knows this, but apparently there's a book out, and this isn't a new idea, but the research is kind of, there's some new research out there. Someone just published a book about how the United States would not be an economic power if it weren't for slavery. Now, that might not be a provocative idea to us because we that might seem kind of like common sense, but building that case is always something that's taking a crunching of data, and it's hard to do. And so there's a new book that really tries to lay out this case. And I think it's fascinating. Like, it's something that, of course, there's whole swaths of our society that don't want to hear that shit. But it's true. Capitalism requires exploitation to function. This shouldn't even be a controversial statement. Gus writes, I got in an argument with my dad over the parable of the talents the other day. He thinks the king is the God figure, and I don't. Can you imagine a bunch of peasants hearing a story about a distant king's servants getting 100% returns on investment and thinking, ooh, that sounds nice. That return is coming out of your our exploited asses. That brings up, like, the way of reading parables is a fascinating question. William Herzog's Parables as Subversive Speech is a classic on breaking our assumption that the most powerful person in every parable is somehow a stand-in for God. The fact that we read it that way tells us how we think about God as the ultimate authority in some sort of weird hierarchical system, and that's kind of effed up.
Yeah,
I agree with the medieval view of leisure, and I feel like I always come off sounding like I'm pro Middle Ages, and that's not my goal. I bring it up to contrast how, just to put into perspective how everything here today isn't great. Like, people had more free time in the Middle Ages. Generally speaking,
people everywhere before the Industrial Revolution
had more free time. Just across the board, generally.
And not only did they have more free time, but they also had greater control over their time. And in fact, the concept of time was different. Right. So, you know, there's all sorts of interesting ways that you can see this. So, for example, the fact that we sleep one large block of sleep at night is not the normal human state. So the normal human state is to sleep multiple blocks throughout a 24-hour day. But the problem is that did not fit with an industrial factory schedule. And so once you had to have shift work, you then, you know, somebody had to work a 10, 12-hour shift, then they had to sleep all in one block to be able to come back and work that shift. So now even time becomes capitalized, right? And we even say that, time is money. What the hell does that even mean? Time is money, I mean, you know, but when time becomes capitalized, just like land and just like food and just like care and everything else and work, Now we become a slave to all of that, right? Mm. And in all pre-industrial societies, you know, so for example, hunter-gatherers, they might go on a big hunt, right? They might get an animal, and then they're like, great, now we've got food for a few weeks, and, you know, so we can hang out a lot. And obviously there's day-to-day chores and care to do and everything, but, you know, we can lay around. And by the modern capitalist standards, that is lazy. Well, why is that lazy? Well, it's only lazy because you're not making money for somebody else.
Well, and this is the relationship with the land. I've shared a couple of these memes recently, but about the division of land. So that's the other thing. Like, we can think about it as though the lords owned land, but that wasn't exactly the case, because there was commons. Like, before capitalism, there was a common inheritance. So the wealth of that land, there was some of it that was for everyone just to glean or to gather from and use, as long as they followed specific communal rules. And we don't have that really anymore. And so this idea, like, you could actually, in the Middle Ages, not work the way we think about work and still get by, because there are people that did, you know, communities would kind of share resources. That happened a little bit more than we like to think. Today, it's this assumption: if you don't work, you don't eat, unless you're somehow disabled, and then we have pity for you, and then we should give you the bottom level, and you should work hard to prove that you deserve it. Like, this is, and you even contrast this, you know, nothing freaks out white Americans like mentioning Sharia law, but part of the way. But in Sharia law, like, the economics of Sharia is fascinating, and I'm not an expert, so if someone wants to correct me on this, please do. But my understanding is, like, giving alms to people is not only virtuous for you, but there's nothing wrong with receiving alms for your livelihood. There's not an ethic of work the way we think of in traditional Islam. So, and that to me is reflective of all kinds of societies, where it's not this idea that everyone has to work and do their part or they don't eat. Again, that's another misquoted, misunderstood passage. If you don't work, you don't eat.
Right.
From the Apostle Paul, which
people love that one.
It's like, let's avoid all these passages where Paul says really provocative things like, if you eat communion while the laborers are out in the fields, you're eating at the table of demons. There is no male or female for those who are in Christ. Let's avoid that stuff. But let's take this: if you don't work and you don't eat, and make an entire economic philosophy off of it.
All right, we got some more comments coming in.
Why and how is it that since the beginning it's been the few oppressing the masses?
I mean, that's a really great question, and you know, I would say that it has a lot to do with the fact that, you know, this is emblematic of our fundamental alienation as human beings, and that we're alienated from ourselves and from each other, from the rest of creation, and from God. And so what starts to happen in that alienation is that we're scared and we're lonely. And so then, you know, the people who are more powerful, and whether that's, you know, physically or mentally or whatever it happens to be, they say, well, you know, the way that I can fill that void is by taking more and more and getting power, right? And power, we have this feeling, you know, power is a lot about a feeling, and it's a feeling of, you know, dominance and supremacy, and we feel safe and secure. So that's what happens. And, you know, we see God talking about this early on in the development of the kingdom of Israel, where, you know, God says, look, you know, having a king is a really bad idea.
Yeah, totally.
And
God is not pro king.
There's all list, right, of like, this is what the king is going to do to fuck you up. And people are like, well, we need a king anyway. And again, it's that. So the masses, participate. I mean, we participate in our own oppression because there's a level of security that feels. And so, so all human beings, as we're driven by this alienation, we then end up participating in oppression. And, you know, and this is one of the things that Jesus, and I would argue all spiritual systems, are anti-oppression, because they say, look, if you're connected and non-alienated and empowered, you have compassion. You have the opposite of the desire for power and oppression. You have compassion, and you don't want to oppress people.
Yeah, and a lot of this has to do with some people are good at manipulating other people's fear. I mean, this is not all of power is based on that, but it's a big chunk of it. And so we want security. I mean, that's why they wanted a king in Israel. It's also why, like this, look, let's just use a modern example that's very pressing and current, is this movement to defund or abolish the police. So these are people that have authority to kill. They're an authoritarian, violent, hierarchical thing going on there. And the reason why so many people who might otherwise not want the police tolerate it and think the police are good ideas, because they say, what about rapists and serial killers? That's almost always what it comes down to. Mm-hmm. And so here's this fear, which is it valid to be afraid of those things? Well yes. But the idea that somehow if we have more police around, then we will have less of those things is strange. And so what happens is the fear for something, like the worst example we can think of, is used to legitimize these authoritarian systems. That's how it almost always works. Mm-hmm. And so it's like our fear is being hacked.
Yeah. We're a couple up.
There we go.
Yeah.
Okay, here we go. Gus writes, I love Herzog's quip that parables aren't earthly stories with heavenly meanings. They are earthly stories with heavy meanings. I think that's pretty good. Ashley writes, do you think it's possible to point out the ubiquity and insidiousness of capitalism and the way the church supports and feeds the machine without coming across as anti-church?
You know, maybe. I'm not really concerned about coming across as anti-church.
about that too much either. But
yeah, I mean, if by church you're talking about a particular human institution, a particular manifestation of this kind of community, you know, I think you can lift up many examples of communities that have called themselves churches that are very anti oppression and capitalist, but yeah, when the church has participated in oppression and capitalism, which it certainly has all throughout the world in terms of colonialism, I'm very much anti that kind of church, for sure.
And it's sad. Mm-hmm. But you know, most church expressions I think are kind of crap. Like, I know that's judgmental, but I'm continually disappointed. And it's not because I hate the church. It's because I love it a lot. I love the idea of it. I've had some great experiences in it. And so I'm perpetually disappointed. Mm-hmm. And I think we can do better. But part of the problem is, it's, you know, if you can have an economic system that exploits people, and then you have a system like the church that requires donations, it's going to lean towards being okay with exploitation so that it can get money. But we're all kind of in that mess together. And so the issue isn't that I want churches to be pure. It's just I want them to push back. And that rarely do they.
Yep.
So that's a big bummer. CK, school is capitalized as well. Children learning in one block of time is preparing them for work mindset. Yeah, education.
Yep. Absolutely. Absolutely. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I could go out of. I just was rereading some Paulo Freire, Pedagogy of the Oppressed, and it's just amazing. It holds up really well. And one of the big pieces that he talks about is revolutionary education requires dialogue. And what he means by that is basically students being able to have their full voice and engaging problems together instead of having information banked in them. And just even just the approach of how school is, it's like you're not – you know, it's not about empowering children to understand how to engage the world with critical thought. Not enough anyways. And so, of course, it creates a certain docile worker population for the most part. Not to mention the school to prison pipeline and all that kind of other crap. Ceres writes, it's really whack how rest and leisure was demonized. Also, I noticed that contribution, craft, and artistry is demonized, and that those things would also threaten the capitalist work ethic.
Yeah, well, they're either demonized, or the other thing that happens is that there's a constant push to bring them into the full capitalist system, right? So it's like, get your store on Etsy, you know, get your thing, right? You know, become bigger and better, produce more and more stuff. You know, there's no sense of, wow, you know, craftsmanship takes a long time and, you know, thought and reflection, and that's wonderful. It's like, hey, you made a beautiful pot. Great. Can you make 500 beautiful pots? And so, yeah, absolutely. It's all trying to get pushed into that.
Ellen writes, even more than a distraction, leisure is now under capitalism, basically reduced to social reproduction, recreating your ability to produce value. Yeah, even think about how rest is even, like, you take a vacation so that you can be more able to go back to work. Like, that's really the logic.
Yeah, recharge.
Rather than, and you know, this isn't universal. Like, yes, Scandinavian countries probably have some of this crappy capitalist thinking, but it's not as bad. Like, they really, you get more of a sense in a lot of European countries based on the conversations I've had, and I'm not an expert, I haven't studied this, that, you know, the recreating is what the point is. And so you work so that you can kind of have a lot of that time to have leisure, and you do it well. Yeah. And we don't have that really baked into our society at all because, and again, this is tying into the Christian thing. We moralize this so much. Oh. And so this is the way, one of the primary ways that the church reinforces this stuff is it moralizes. I mean, calling someone lazy is a moral critique. And if you can make the case that they're lazy, then you can, then it's easy to say they don't deserve to barely live unless they work hard. And you get this weird thinking that somehow, even though it's cheaper, like it's theoretically cheaper based on studies to give every homeless person a house, but we don't because it'll enable their laziness. So this is how this moral shit kind of bakes into all this.
So we're past time, so we should kind of blaze through our comments. We got two more days to talk about this.
So he writes, working more does not make you actually excel or skillful on what you're doing. Working more can mean digging ourselves personally and collectively into the shit pits. I've never heard the term shit pits, but thank you for adding that to my lexicon. That's a good, I like it. CK writes, so baby eater, I don't know what the baby eater's comment is referring to.
Well, that's the rapists and murderers.
Oh yeah. And
baby eaters.
Yeah, we gotta watch out. We need police to protect us from those roving bands of baby eaters. Ellen writes, the Jubilee Gospel by Kim Tan and the Sabbath by Rabbi Heschel are wonderful for looking at these themes. Also is the book called The Economics of Paul. Mark, you had the author come to the Rooted Conference at Clare House in 2011. Who wrote The Economics of Paul? Hmm. I don't. I can't remember.
Yeah.
That may be. I can't remember. If I think of it, I'll post something. Rainier writes, it seems that we have to take conscious measures to protect our societies from the economic consequences of our fallen nature with things like distributive justice, like how we have to acquire good second nature habits to protect against individual fallen nature. Maybe.
I mean, that's what the spiritual life is about, is becoming more conscious and responding to that, right? Actually making choices. Not necessarily going on a habit. And that's a collective thing as well as an individual thing.
Well, and I always, this is, anytime someone brings up fallen nature or human nature, I always want to bring in this point. Like, there's actually good parts to human nature. So collaboration, collective work, there's reason we live in societies instead of as individual. Like, there are good parts to being human that are instinctive that we need to support. And capitalism like pushes those things down and drives up some of the worst bits. And so a good society encourages the good bits and pushes down the bad bits. And so it's kind of flipped. So our society encourages selfishness and violence. It does not encourage collaboration and mutuality, not nearly enough. Although sometimes it just comes out in glorious ways. James writes, defend the church. Do you mean defund?
Yeah, at first I thought that was defund.
Good. Yeah, so.
All right, let's keep rolling.
CK writes, karoshi, which can be translated literally as overwork death, is a Japanese term relating to occupational sudden mortality. The most common medical causes of karoshi deaths are heart attacks or strokes due to stress and a starvation diet. Yeah. Oof. Yeah. Khan writes, I've been liking this show Shark Tank lately. Entrepreneurs fascinate me, but then I think, do we really need more of this shit, like foam hats, et cetera, to bend? I am fascinated by that show. I enjoy watching it, but at a certain point in each episode, I start feeling icky or a sense of dread. So I hear you. Dorinda writes, total side tangent, most often asked question about any of my paintings. Quote, how long did it take you to do that? Right. No appreciation right. of the skill set or talent, just time and money based. That is yep. a great point.
Yep. Yep. It's a great example.
Gus writes, I've enjoyed listening to the birds in the background. It's weird to think I'm listening to birds on the other side of the continent in real time. Is it my birds? I can't hear birds.
Gus, it's birds. Your robots.
Are you familiar with distributism? Derek writes, yes, that's the idea of like a hybrid of socialism and capitalism made popular by people like G.K. Chesterton. I think there's something to that. We could probably maybe talk about these different models later in the week. Yeah. Ellen writes, children still have some value under capitalism because of potential, but the disabled, jailed, and elderly are forgotten or hyper-exploited by capitalism. Fascinating. Jesus addresses these with generous care and attention. Amen. Yes.
So you hit on the whole ableism issue.
Yeah, for sure. And you're right. Jesus gives his attention to these people who, under our current system, are the most invisibilized or devalued. Ceres writes, how does the work harder this affect our relating in terms of how to improve and being better lovers and comrades in our relations?
Hmm. That'd be a good one to take up next time.
Even this framework of like we need to work on ourselves has some problematic overtones, but that's so it's a great question. James writes, yeah, defund. I think I got autocorrected.
You got autocorrected.
See, the system tries to take away your voice, James. Gus writes, I think they're in the background of Dan's.
Yeah.
I can't hear your birds.
Gus has good robot sensibilities.
Mm-hmm.
He's on the lookout for robots. All right. Well, great to be with all of you again. Thank mm-hmm. you so much for your time and attention. And we'll see you on Wednesday.
See you Wednesday, everybody. Bye.
Bye.